Hello once again, everybody. As usual, this is Bloodfencer with a PMDA podcast, and with me is the one and only Purple Cacleon. Heyo, PK.
Yeah.
Alright, first off, apologies that this episode is so late. Some stuff came up. Mainly, it was my fault because I am moving into a different apartment in a different town. And I've been busy just carrying stuff around and being really tired and, yeah, all that fun sort of stuff. Also, most of you probably don't know how I handle these episodes. Every time we want to record, I prepare a little script for myself with questions I'm going to ask, and this script I'm currently looking at has been prepared last week. To be more exact, the day after part three of the Mission 8 prologue got released, so I'm going to have to improvise with some things here.
I don't think anyone's gonna mind.
Yeah, I hope. So there's probably going to be a lot of stuttering. Yeah, so, as I announced in the last episode, I'd like to focus on talking about certain characters in this episode. This time, the Cacleon family.
I'm so excited!
PK is just wiggling in her seat. Of course I can't see it, because this is not a video chat. But I can imagine
it. It's true.
I can imagine it, and it's adorable. But before we go into that, I wanted to talk about another thing that's a week old now. Most of you probably already know about the Sylphion reveal, the new Eevee evolution.
And so old news, yeah.
So old news now. And right after it came out, PK actually drew a few pictures of Lexi becoming a Sylphion. Nymphion, Sylphion, whatever it is now.
Yeah.
So, I wanted to ask you, where is it? Oh yeah, did you actually have any plans at all to evolve Alexi before Sylphion came along?
No, actually I had none, because none of the evolutions felt correct. They all felt like the totally wrong choice for Lexi, but as soon as this came out, I was very enamored with the idea of him evolving into that. So I guess we'll see how that plays out later.
So what exactly was wrong with the other evolutions? Like, what felt so off about Glaceon?
Well, it just seemed irrelevant to him, I guess, and he also, the character himself, doesn't really like any of the evolutions that he knows about, and the character doesn't know about this other evolution, so that's also fitting for his own story.
Suddenly evolution. Surprise, you're pink and have ribbons all over.
That's fantastic.
That just sounds like a setup from Merlo.
It really does.
She has been planning this all along. Well, this was short and fine. And there you have it, guys. But now let's get to the topic you must have been dying to talk about. Payapa Kiwi and her family. Of course, what better place to start this discussion than the oldest known member, Mikkel Nomal, also known as Grand Cag. A successful,
Pleasant,
valiant adventurer and fearless leader, but also a bit of an old creep. Tell us what you think are some of the more defining aspects of GK's personality.
Well, first of all, he really loves adventure, and that's pretty important to him. He likes adventure, he likes seeking out rare finds, rare objects, and that's what's, I guess, gotten him his friends, if you can call them that. His closest friends are Callahan and Brooke. And it seems kind of bizarre that Callahan would have any friends at all. But they're both similar in the same sort of don't give a crap about anyone way. So I guess that led them together to adventure together for a bit. We have a few small stories planned about that eventually. I wanted to make those into doujin books, but we'll see if I end up turning that to a story or something. And there is a story about how he met Brooke, and it had to do not with he thought she was a cool girl or anything, but that he liked the look of her scales, and so he saved her because he thought they were rare. And yeah, so
Always keeping the
he,
eye on the prize.
yes, he doesn't exactly care too much about individuals unless it means something to him. So I think that's pretty important about him. That I get, and I guess you could say that all of the Kecleon have some sort of greed aspect to them, but for different things. And for Meikle, it's definitely for artifacts. That's his favorite. I think that sums him up tidily.
All right, so as the recent prologue showed, GK is also very capable of making sacrifices, just not
Yes.
necessarily personal ones.
Yeah.
How far would he get? Would he go to get what he wants?
I think he would do whatever it took. I mean, there's more to the village story than is being shown right now. And in the Mission 8 epilogue, we'll be covering more of that. We'll be covering all of the Zoroark tribe stuff that people don't quite know about right now, but I'm sure that they can infer. He has gone very far, but he saves himself as the last resort for if he needs to do something. He would gladly stick others in front of him because what's the point of using yourself if you can use others as a resource? That's how he sees it, and I don't think it's very easy to argue with that.
Do you think his greed might one day become his undoing?
It kind of does. His life ends not very excitingly. Something, yeah. I think people who are paying attention might have picked up on something in a past epilogue where Devonshire mentioned Grand Kek like a year ago by now, almost. And how he gave himself up for the village. But it wasn't really out of selflessness. So that'll be expanded upon later.
All right, we'll be excited to hear more about that. So we know he's a very determined Kecleon, for lack of a better term.
Yes.
But what about his physical abilities? Is he truly as strong and capable as he claims, or did he maybe have some help which he doesn't feel obligated to mention when he tells stories of his grand adventures?
He's pretty strong. He's pretty capable. He's a pretty good fighter. And that's, I think, perhaps one of the only reasons he and Callahan got along is because they were able to fight, heel to heel, not one overpowering the other. And that's pretty important for both of them, capable fighters. Especially back then when it was really rough and any sort of settlements ran the risk of being overrun by Pokemon who didn't give a crap about community and just wanted what they wanted. And he's obviously not the strongest ever, but I think he has some help that he doesn't talk about. For one, I know people wonder about his staff, and it does have a purpose I can't totally talk about, but it helps him out quite a bit when it comes to fighting. So, and it'll never, like, no one else will really ever notice it except for the fact that he has a hard time actually getting beat up because his staff helps out in that regard.
So, is he more of a direct fighter, or does he more rely on trickery and
I
stuff?
think most of the Kecleons rely on trickery, really. And he knows Mimic, so that's a great help. You have to be really smart and resourceful in order to use Mimic correctly.
That's
So
true.
Yeah, so I think trickery is always something the Cair Cleann family is good at, even if it's not always in fighting. It's in how they manipulate others, or how they deal with others, or how they approach a situation. I think, for instance, Inanna and PK would approach fights very differently. Inanna would try and get others to fight for her, which she would succeed at, and PK would be very sneaky, not let anyone know she's going to be attacking, and then strike. So they all have a different way of fighting.
So he actually knows how to handle himself when he gets confronted with some fisticuffs.
Yes.
Ah, and what about his family? GK seems to spend a lot of time away from home, but we do know he has a wife and at least two kids for waiting for him in Lomomola. And
Yes.
eventually there's going to be a third one who's going to become PK's and Anana's grandfather.
Yes.
How did he meet
Well,
his wife, and how much does he actually care for her, seeing he's a bit of a womanizer?
he met his wife pretty early on, and he knew that he needed a family, so that was his main motivation. And because he's a little vain, he wanted his family to consist of Cair Cleann. He didn't want it to be other Pokemon, I guess, tainting his family line. So that was his whispered his main decision in finding a Cair Cleann wife. And it was important to him that he find someone that he could bend to his will. And so he picked the sort of wispiest pushover he could find.
Oh, that's not very nice.
No, it's not.
Exactly how important are his kids? You drew a basic family tree a while ago on your Tumblr, a very long time ago, and you actually expanded on that just earlier today.
Well,
We know that one of them eventually sired Agave, PK's and Inanna's father, who would eventually take over Alamomola Bay as well as Tau Village. But what was he like and what did he do?
Salak?
Yes,
Yeah. Well, he was pretty charismatic. He was not very entranced with the way that Meikle handled things, and he tried to work at expanding the Alamoa, I guess, shops, because Lychee, Meikle's wife, wasn't very good at that. Selic kind of had to. He didn't deal very well with his brother's death, but they together, they kind of had to grow up without a dad. I mean, that's basically what happened. Meikle spent most of his time in Tau. He never really visited Alamomola, and Alamomola was kind of at risk of being lost until Salak took the reins from his mom and started running things at an early age. So Meikle didn't really care that much about his family. He had a motivation for staying in Tau till the very end, which is absurd if you look back on it. But he felt he had to. And Salak ended up getting Tau after Meikle's, or not quite after, he took it over around the same time when Meikle was still running it pretty, when he got pretty old. And then he ended up not really liking the whole merchant life anymore for various reasons to do with not enjoying his family that much. And so he let his brother run it. He went off to do his own thing. So his brother was Pecan and Anna's granddad.
Percy Curran.
Yep.
Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah.
Ah, all right. Probably for those of you who have not looked at the family tree yet, the new version that is, short explanation who Meikle's sons are. There's Topo Lugart, I think.
Loquat.
Lokat. Okay. He's the son you actually saw in in the part 3 of the Mission 8 prologue, the one who Mikkel caught the cut the tail off.
Yeah.
He actually went blind at a very young age and died as a young adult. Then we have Salak Lime, who PK just told us about. And lastly, Percy Current, who is PK's grandfather. All right. Okay, we just answered this question. Oh man. Working with this script is really hard, seeing how outdated this is. In the family tree, it shows that Agave had a brother who had inherited both Alamomola and Tao from his father and one of their uncles. As Salak gave it to Percy, and Percy then gave it to Agave's brother, whose name is Melon.
Melon. Yep. Melindo.
Yeah, what happened to him?
Oh, well, Callahan will actually make a reference to Melon in part 4, but he got Tal and Amamola because he knew his kids, and he knew Agave should not be running Tal or Amamola. So he gave it to Melon. Agave had to go do his own thing, so he opened up a new place in Gambitville, a little ranch. And that didn't end up going so well after time. That was a pretty brutal place. And it kind of, stories about that ranch are why PK doesn't like going to Tal Ranch at all.
Oh.
Yeah. So, Melon... It wouldn't be very prudent for me to talk about what happened to him right now. Because it might spoil a couple of things. But I can't say he'll be making any return. So.
Alright. So, an interesting little piece of information you can gather from the family tree is that Cherry, Agave's wife, actually used to date Melon. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. You can tell she's not very happy anymore.
Yeah, there seems to be this theme about female Kecleons in the Perry family.
Yeah, kind of. Except Peach. She's pretty happy.
That was Percy's wife. If you look at the family tree, she looks really happy about finding that man.
For the most part, the Kecleon that don't like each other are turned away.
Ah, okay. That's good to know. There are some certain undeniable similarities between Agave and PK, GK. The apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, after all. Yet they are still pretty different. Just how much of GK is in Agave?
I would say they're similar in a lot of ways. They're not so similar for the fact that GK was much better, I guess, manipulation of getting people to do what he wanted, and way better at hiding his motivations, which were really important for him to get as far as he did. Agave's not quite as good at that because his temper comes out way easier than
GK. He looks like
GK.
A very angry keck.
Yeah. I guess his temper sort of transferred down into PK a little bit.
Yeah, a little. But she tries to keep it in check.
She does. She makes an effort, which is more than can be said for him.
Back to the topic of wives. How does Agave regard his, actually?
He mostly sees her as a way for him to keep having the businesses run. Like, he just wanted kids to go do the thing that he wanted done. And so he took Cherry, I guess that's how it says he took her.
There haven't been any indications that Agavi got the same sex drive as grandfather seemed to possess,
Yeah, not really.
but you never know. At least he doesn't actually seem to spend as much time apart from his family like the old greed one did. So is he more
He
of a family man then?
used to spend more time away. He used to make frequent trips to Tau to run things there, and then would come back down on Momoa. But he is sort of more of a family man, but it's a little, I guess, superficial and a little more about just having power and liking that.
Would you say he just feels that trading his children is more important for the family business than doing all the work himself? And then
Yeah.
having them fight over what he leaves upon his death?
Yeah, it's he finds it more beneficial to their family in the long run, if he makes the children do what he wants in Tal and Amamola. That's he had them trained that way he could leave with Cherry to overseas and set up a business there, and they'd be able to trade back and forth. And he'd be able to like set up a really big sort of trading post overseas to get like stuff that wasn't on the main continent, on Tau continent. So that was his main motivation with kids, so he could expand further and still have links back to Tau continent.
And seeing how he had only daughters, he had to keep a very close eye on them, like teaching them
Yeah.
what Pokemon not to copulate with.
Yes, basically. This is going to be actually a big topic for Mission 8 Epilogue. I'm going to be covering a lot of the childhood past stuff for Pecan and Anna. I know I have the one story in the works, and it still has a few more pages to be illustrated, but I'm going to be covering essentially the whole reason for contention between Pecan and Anna. The reason that they don't get along very well really soon, like that's coming up, and that will cover more about Agavi and Cherry for sure, and more about what's going on with Pecan Twigs because that's relevant to the past backstory as well, and Agavi telling them not to go with these certain boys and stuff.
So finally, we get to the two youngest members of the Kecleon family, Enana and Payappa. The two are
Yes.
twins, and Enana is actually a couple seconds older than PK, that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Those girls could not be more different from another than they already are. Even as children, they pretty much behave the same as today, more or less, of course.
Yeah.
Enana
Basically.
always has been this sweet, obedient girl with a bright attitude and maybe a darker interior. From the stories, it's pretty obvious that she was her parents' favorite in terms of usefulness to the family business.
Yes.
And PK always had a grumpy, slightly sour attitude she usually shows. Though we know she's perfectly capable of positive emotions, she always seemed less obedient to her parents, mostly because she did not seem to understand the point of some of their instructions, and not because she was lazy. By the way, what I'm telling you guys is not some sort of inside information. There are several stories depicting the Keg's youth, which are readily available to you. If what I'm telling you seems new to your brains, hop on over to PK's gallery or the wiki and read up on this. It is certainly a jolly good read. Back on topic. Enana herself is a pretty interesting character, though not quite as well explored as PK, I think. How does she handle being in charge of Alamomola, especially with the current crisis going on?
She doesn't handle it very well anymore because she, for a while, had been counting on her family, her father and mother, in correspondence if she had any hiccups. And she no longer has that. For months, she hasn't been able to contact them, and she hasn't been able to get any orders in. And so that's been grating on her, and she's tried to handle things her own way, which is to say, a slightly shady way, but it gets the job done, and she feels like she's doing good work. And I don't say that, like trying to hide any of her motivations. She honestly feels like she's doing good work for Pokemon, and that everything she's doing is for a good cause in the end. And I suppose I'm very excited for part four of the story because Inanna will be explored a lot more for almost until the end of the arc.
Oh, that's awesome to know. Does she actually regret helping out the rescuers with so much money when the tourism is slowly dying down and her import routes are blocked by the terrible storm out at seas?
She does not regret that for a reason that you shall see soon, because it becomes useful to her.
Of course it does. And she was actually counting on her father to hand Tao to her instead of Alomomola. So that caused some bad vibes between her and her sister.
Yeah. She didn't expect PK to come back at all from running off. It was sort of like how Psylocke went to go do his own thing after a while. That was just that. And Anna just expected that, well, PK's gone. She's gonna go be a failure somewhere else, doing whatever. I should get both of these because I worked hard and I can do it. And that's not what ended up happening at all. She did get Alomomola, but it was, even though Tao was small, it was the fact that she should have gotten something and she was denied it. Even if there was a perfectly good reason for why PK got it, even if it made sense that having two Pokemon run two different things made more sense, especially since PK proved to be capable, it hit Inanna sorely. And it would have mattered a lot less if some events in their childhood hadn't happened. And I'm sorry to keep saying like this will show up soon, but for honestly, like before April, the whole reason why PK and Inanna have a difficult time getting along will be talked about pretty thoroughly.
Yeah, that's the problem with this show. We can't really discuss many of the things in depth because
I can, yeah.
some are still out on the horizon, but we are talking about things as much as the story allows.
Yeah, I don't want to like totally spoil things for people. I'm hoping people enjoy the story that's going to be told regarding Inanna and PK.
So, back to Inanna. Being in such a high and important position as she is, I'd imagine Inanna does not really allow herself much free time. Does she ever take a break from her work?
She does, but it's not a traditional break. It's more of a break to manage smaller things that aren't quite work related. But really, most of her free time goes to, I guess, keeping her relations up with different Pokemon in the city. That's really important, especially because it's starting to get more dangerous around Alomomola for various reasons that will be explored in Mission 9, finally. And finally, a few different characters will be revealed, not revealed so much, but explored. Like, I know I posted artwork of, maybe some people remember it, Naki, which is the Meowth, her Ditto friend, and her Absol friend. And that will become relevant in Mission 9, as well as something a bunch of people I'm sure have forgotten about. But Candy from the Trebuch Stump will end
Oh
up showing
my.
up again. Yes.
The mysterious candy.
Yes.
I have absolutely no idea what that character is actually like.
Yep.
As
And a lot of
probably
people have
every.
no idea. But I swear it all ties together.
Well, let's hope it does. Because if it doesn't, you will have to pay a very hefty price for disappointing us.
Oh no.
Just kidding. But you talked about relations. Does Does Anana actually have any sort of love interests, or
She does, and
she
that's
does?
yes, she does, and that's the source of the problem between Pecan and Anna.
Oh, boy trouble.
I'm really looking forward to telling the whole story because it sucks for both of them. It's a bad, like, there's no good solution here. That's the thing. And that's why there's a problem.
So people who like romantic drama can look forward to more of that.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, something else. We haven't seen much from our dragon assistant lately, Tara.
Yeah, she kind of does her own thing. She's not quite like Sandy, where Sandy always stays around, well, always stayed around PK in the merchant area. Tara just does whatever she feels like, and no one really questions her because she's just like a little oblivious. It's a weird situation. Anana likes having her help, but Tara just does whatever, goes around the city helping whoever she feels like. So sometimes she'll follow Anana around, but it's not like they're super close. They're like weird friends.
So they just sort of get along but are not
Yeah.
really really tight.
Yeah.
Right. Finally, it should be obvious that Anana is going to play a big role in the near future, especially after that ominous little mental breakdown she had in Prologue Part 2. Are we in for a hostile takeover?
I am not at
Cannot say.
liberty to say.
I knew. I still had to ask. If there was an off chance, you might spill some beans.
No beans are being spilled here.
Moving on to PK then. A lot of things happened between PK living in Alamomola and her becoming the head of Tau Village. Some stuff got covered in backstories, some has not. Please tell us about these events in as much detail as you feel comfortable with.
After she went through a bunch of crap as a child, which is the whole point of upcoming stories, she decided to take a break. But this was after she visited a fortune teller, and the fortune teller gave her a bunch of bogus, she thought. And there's actually a story upcoming about the fortune teller with Bluegill and Lilim, so that should be interesting. But after she got her little fortune, she decided it was garbage and she was going to go travel for a while. And she went and saw her dad, and he was like, "Whatever, don't bother me." That was basically the beginning of her traveling. After she stayed with Lamia and learned about a bunch of different natural cures and uses of berries. So she used her time wisely. She was learning about a bunch of different items, how you could use them, how you could sell them, even though that wasn't the purpose of Lamia teaching her. But PK being a little apprentice to her helped a lot. Like, she knows a ton about different items. It doesn't mean that she's very good at selling them. That's why Shroomsworth is helpful in that regard. But she knows a lot about different things, which is pretty cool. Aside from that, she traveled a lot after she was done being an assistant to Lamia, and that's when she went and talked to her dad and whatever. She traveled around to Prismatic Jungle, down to around Fort Volt. Fort Volt is really interesting. I wish I could talk more about it right now, but it's going to be cracked open soon, essentially. Not too soon. We're getting to Steel City first. But she did a lot of traveling so she could find out about different places that had the useful items Lamia talked about. So she could get little trade routes set up, little groups of Pokemon who would give her these useful items. So a bunch of her traveling before she actually got Tao from her dad was her finding out where she could get really cool stuff That was like the whole purpose of her trip, is finding out who she could get set up trade with, like where these different settlements were. I mean, she'd heard about them, but she'd never really traveled a whole bunch. And she figured that was important if she was actually going to be serious about this. Because the whole merchant thing was really boring to her before she realized it could be a lot more than that if she wanted it to be, which is why she decided to go travel. And,
I take it that the that this whole process of preparing for what was essentially going to become her job later on is a little bit more intelligent than her father would have given her credit for.
yeah, he got pretty pissed off because of a mistake that she made, which wasn't totally her fault. And the after effects of that are seen in Dojin too. She was in the jungle and had a whole run-in with Tivoli because she was trying to set up some trade from a black market there. And she ended up being there for a while, not really. It was a little against her will, but she didn't have a very good time there. Eventually did escape, but not before biting the tip of his tail off, which like maybe should have broken most Pokemon's jaws, I think.
Okay,
But
cats have
he's pretty,
really strong jaws.
yeah, but he's pretty old, so I think that helped a little in not breaking her mouth. But yeah, so she did that as sort of like a little, I guess, dumb revenge thing. Like she was pretty mad. It wasn't a very good choice to make, but she did it anyway. And she left down to Tao, and her father was like, "Eh, whatever." And so she left down to Fort Volt, did some exploring there, around that area to see what was up. Decided there was nothing that she could really get of value there because, like, when she tried to sneak in, that didn't end very well. So she left. But by the time she came back to Tao, there had been an assault on Tao Village, thanks to Tivoli. He sent Pokemon after her to like go kill her. They couldn't find her, but they saw that she had been in Tao. They didn't see her leave, so they attacked the merchant building there because it was shaped like a Kecleon. So really, it kind of gave away, Kecleon live here, and that wasn't very good. And PK's dad, Agavi, totally blamed her for that because of what the attackers had said, etc. And so she was ba like banished from the village till she fixed things. She actually went to Elder Shroom after a whole little trip through Merlot's castle, and he helped her out. And that's something that Shroomsworth did not know for his whole. After he left, he didn't know that PK was telling the truth about having known Elder. He didn't know that because she doesn't talk about good things people do for her. She doesn't talk about anything like that. So Shroomsworth had no idea. Every time that like PK tries to talk about anything, really, it ends in bad stuff happening. Well, I guess you'll find that out with Inanna and PK, the story coming up. So she's sort of developed this, I guess, aversion to talking about issues or even like good things, bad things that happen. She doesn't like talking about anything in the past like that because of everything that just kept happening, which is why she wasn't totally honest with Shroomsworth about a lot of things. So it wasn't like she did it maliciously. It was sort of something that happened as a result of when I talk, bad things happen, so I'll just not talk.
Which is understandable if she has made that experience of the past a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. I apologize for being so horrible cliche, but I just have to inquire on the topic of romance once again. PK does not seem like the type who would use someone's affection for her to gain what she desires, but lately she's been hanging around with a certain Persian by the name of Twix, and he's been showering her with presents. I can't help but feel that she does not really enjoy his presence. What's their story? And what does she really think about him?
Well, they had some encounters during her childhood, which is coming up. I can't wait. I'm so excited. This is a big thing. But she did know him and ended up, that was part of the reason actually why she left Alamomola as a kid. It's because she was done dealing with a bunch of friends who she didn't really think were her friends and tired of dealing with her parents. But yeah, as far as the present time, people noticed right away that she did not wear her ring anymore after she wrote her letter to Shroomsworth in the past. Like,
Oh my God,
a bunch of
I
people.
actually didn't notice that.
Yeah, a bunch of people did notice, like immediately. They pointed out she's not wearing her ring anymore. What happened to it? And so that will definitely be coming up soon. But yeah, I can say without really it's pretty obvious that she doesn't care about being around Twigs that much. But she kind of feels like it's an obligation. So that gets in the way of her doing what she actually wants to do. Because Tao has become an obligation to her instead of something that she used to care about a lot. She cares about it in a different way now, where it feels like a duty. And Twigs was the easiest way to, I guess, take care of that.
Unless she wanted to hand the entire village over to her sister.
Yeah. So that's that.
Of course, Twix got all his wealth and influence, but he's lacking what? But he is lacking charm and a big, majestic monocle. All qualities another man in PK's life possesses. Shroomsworth of Breloom, hailing from humble sapling village. Tell us how they met and how they became partners first, and some point. And at some point, eventually, lovers.
Well, she met Shroomsworth when he didn't actually know it was her. I think some people remember this in Mission 5 epilogue. Maybe it was 6 prologue, whatever. He realized that the first time he met her was actually in Sapling Village, and she was the color black, so he didn't recognize it. She was being very rude. So he totally blanked that out from his mind for a while. But after that, when they first met in Tao, he was actually a coming up from Steel City. He took a trip down there. It didn't go very well for him, and he was still at Shroomish at the time. He came up to Tao and ended up training with Master Fu after a series of, I guess, like a couple odd encounters with Master Fu. He evolved and eventually went to the Merchant Hut and was like, "Hey, you could do things better if you did it like this." And she got really mad at him. That was her first response because she didn't like being told what to do. But he ended up, I guess, phrasing it in a more appealing way. Like, just think about it. You can make this much more money if you did it like this. Just think about it. And she ended up realizing that she could use someone like that because she was really tired of selling stuff. And really, Pokemon in the village, she doesn't get along with a lot of them. But she kind of realized that she was lacking, like, I guess, a face who could do sweet talking to customers to get them to buy stuff, I guess you could say. And so she realized there's like a lot of use in someone who came up and wanted to help out like that. And so she took him on, and that's when she decided, you know, I could use more than just me doing all this stuff anyway. I mean, it's not like she didn't have some helpers, like moving stuff around and stuff like that. But for the most part, it was just her selling, her doing all the work, and it was really boring. And like as soon as he came over and expressed interest in helping out, and she realized he wasn't stupid, that was the start. And that's when she was like, "Okay, you can help me out." And from there, that's when the guild sort of started as they started taking on members and Pokemon who wanted to help out because she figured, if I can take on one person, why can't I take on more Pokemon than that?
Why can't I have all of them?
Yeah. So she decided that, it would be really cool if instead of being so exclusive, they took on a bunch of Pokemon and taught them things and helped them out to help her, but also help themselves. Like, she knew this was a mutual thing. Because if Pokemon were helping her out, but they were also doing their own business thing, everyone was benefiting. Like, if there was a little trading post 50 miles from Tower or whatever, and they were part of the Merchants Guild, then everything came back to her eventually. But Pokemon were still, they had her backing, which helped her out and helped them out. So she decided, like, that was the ideal of the Merchants Guild, is we need to expand, include a bunch of Pokemon, even Pokemon who aren't quite so good at selling or whatever. They can figure out their own thing, and we can help them, and they can help us. And we can be all over the place as a result of this. So that was like her ideal for the Merchants Guild. That was the reason that it became started, and it all started with Shrimpsworth butting in and trying to like tell her how she should do things. And I guess after that, it was, I think, a couple of years of her knowing Shrimpsworth before they became that close. It wasn't like an overnight suddenly they realized, oh, I love you. Like, that wasn't really how it went.
Of course not.
Yeah, she well, she's, I guess you could say, pretty abrasive normally. And Shroomsworth is really good at taking that and toning it down. And that sort of, I guess, that quality made him and her get along. Like, they got along well, but it was mostly because he just knew that's how she was, and she knew that was how he was. Like, they complimented each other in like a kind of weird way, but it worked.
And she just knew
And
that he sort of understood her.
yeah, and which was great because there aren't many Pokemon like that. So that was something that she didn't realize it, but she started to really like that. But things got a little hard when the whole slasher thing happened. That was when she realized that she actually cared about him more than she had realized herself. Like, the idea of losing him was pretty terrible to her, and she hadn't even considered it as a possibility. So that's the whole resignation story set. But yeah, from there he got his broken leg because of Slasher. And this is sort of the start of PK not telling him things she did. She wanted him to get better, so she borrowed the Thistle Whistle for an extended period of time.
Yes.
Because she knew it would help him out if she could use it right. And she did not use it right, and he got another broken leg and a concussion. And then she did use it right, but only after Fennel helped her. And Shroomsworth didn't remember what just happened, but his legs were fixed, and that was fine. And she had intended to return the Thistle Whistle, but it was a little too late because things happened with Sorbet and stuff. But yeah, so they got like really close, but she was keeping things from him, and that was the whole reason that they had a fight and he left. He didn't believe her after that because, well, she stole stuff, didn't tell him. How was he supposed to believe her anymore? So
And of course, Shroom probably doesn't know about her little habit of not talking about things just because she's afraid of bad things
yeah,
happening.
he does not know about that. And he was only able to sort of figure that something more was going on when he found out she was telling the truth about Elder Shroom, when he found out about the little deal they made. That made him feel really bad because he had basically called her a liar.
So tragic.
Kinda. It's a series of bad misunderstandings and miscommunication.
And their future is still kind of murky because we don't know if they'll actually get back together or not.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then there's Mike. He's been having a
Yeah.
crush on her for a long time, as he confirmed before the whole getting sucked into the past thing happened. But how does
Yeah.
she feel about him, in all honesty? Doesn't she like him even a little?
Oh boy, this is going to come up as a topic very soon.
Ah, so this is another no-talk topic.
I can talk about it a little. She's still mad at him in the past right now, as of this moment.
Of course.
She's she's not going to be very happy when he comes back, and this is one of like the possible branches that there could be. I can't say how it goes, but their friendship status is affected by which guild won. So I mean, it's already set now, but before I knew which guild won for this past mission, I wasn't sure how their friendship was gonna go. So I'm very, I guess, interested to see how Mission 8 Epilogue, how people react to it. Because I think this is can't say too much more, but it should be really interesting to see some PK and Mike interactions soon.
All right, so we got a lot of exciting stuff to look forward to.
Yeah.
But of course, it is not all about romance with a man. PK had to deal with losing a few very important people, which held a special place in her heart. For one, there is Sorbet the Curum, and on the other hand, there is Elder Shroom of Saveling Village. In a way, both of them were kind old men who were willing to give PK a chance when others would not, and they acted a little like her mentors. Would you agree to that sentiment?
I would actually. That's an interesting thing to say. She never really had a sort of mentor, father figure. Her own dad was not very good at that. So I think that's why she took to them especially well. And I guess maybe they realized that without really knowing her whole past, I think they must have picked up on the fact that she lacked the sort of advice that they were willing to give.
She must be having a hard time without their support. I mean, the poor girl is not just responsible for the Merchants Guild, but for the entire village. Whenever something bad happens, people are going to come to her and demand from her that she fixes things. Or they come to blame her. There's a lot of stress
Yeah.
involved in being such an important Cacleon. How well do you think has she dealt with things thus far? And how do you think things would have ended if she had to deal with everything on her own? Like, completely.
Oh boy. I think she's done her best so far. I think like she could have done some things differently, but it wasn't really in her capacity to do so. Particularly losing the support of Shroomsworth was a gigantic blow, which like as you asked, like how would she do things on her own? Well, not very well. Like as soon as she lost his support, that was like taking out a peg under her, knocking her down. And that's kind of it. Like the village has gotten better, but her sanity kind of has slipped a little. And I think that while Shroomsworth was there, she could have talked to him more, but she didn't know how, I guess. And that was her fault, but she did what she could. And I think that I can't say a little too much, but I think that if she were not to have Shroomsworth's support again in the future, that she would not be able to deal with Tao nearly as well as she would have otherwise. So I guess people had better hope.
Keep your fingers crossed, everybody.
Yep.
All right, this has been another very interesting chat with you, PK, even though we had a little bit of a rough start because I was a bit unprepared or ill-prepared. I thank you again for taking the time to answer my questions. Say goodbye to your loyal audience.
See you guys.
Goodbye, you good folks of PMDE. As always, this has been Blood Fencer with the PMDE podcast. Keep your eyes on the Tumblr for news and info on upcoming episodes. Until next time. See ya!